We hear a lot about the state's budget deficit caused by cash flow problems due to low oil prices. So what's the long-term solution? More oil production can help offset those low prices, but oil is a finite resource and the long-term prospects aren't great. Are there new resource models that can help bail us out? Do we need a revolution in fiscal ideas? Or are there other resource riches that Alaska can develop for the future? We'll discuss prospects for future natural resource exploration and development today on Talk of Alaska.
Talk of Alaska is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Now through December 15th is the open enrollment for the health insurance marketplace in Alaska. Plan costs have gone down this year. For free help to enroll, visit getcoveredalaska.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Children's Trust. ACPE's education loan refinance can save you money and give you just one bill for all your private, state, and federal loans. The Alaska Refinance Loan offers Alaska residents a 4.95% interest rate with no fees. You choose between a 5, 10, or 15-year plan. Go to acpe.alaska.gov/radio or call 1-800-441-2962. This message sponsored by Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education.
The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters.
It's Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend. How long will oil be king of the coffers for Alaska? How do we reconcile pumping more with a changing climate that is affecting Alaska at twice the rate of other places? Should the state work to attract tech industry jobs? Is that even possible here? China is crushing the solar panel market right now. Can Alaska grow interest and jobs in sustainable energy? A lot of questions. And today we've got DNR Commissioner Andy Mack to describe the Walker administration's vision for Alaska's resource future. Welcome, Commissioner Mack.
Thank you, Lori.
Thanks so much for being here. You Alaskans can also join our conversation. What do you think the next big resource boom will and should be? Are you all in on more oil or fisheries or mining? Are we missing other possibilities? Give us a call. 1-800-478-8255 is the number statewide. That's 1-800-478-TALK. In Anchorage, the number is 550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. So, Commissioner Mack, let's start with the current buzz about North Slope development. Opening the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge to oil drilling has been in the news a lot lately, with members of Congress debating the issues more seriously than they have in a long time. Have you heard from companies in Alaska that would be interested?
We have, and we think there's going to be tremendous interest if, in fact, the 1002 is open to leasing. One of the arguments that's been made with respect to the 1002 is that without knowing what's there, industry will continue to develop and produce in areas where they have more information. But we don't believe that's the case. In fact, when there's a greenfield opportunity, in other words, when there are no existing leases and there's an opportunity to go and look, history shows us that there's tremendous interest. All you need to do is go back to 2008, which is 9 years ago, I understand that, but in 2008, there was a lease sale in the Chukchi Sea, which generated $2.66 billion in bonus bids. Now, granted, that was at $108 a barrel, but even at $50 a barrel or $55 a barrel, for an area which is onshore, we think there's going to be tremendous interest, and we're getting lots of inquiries about what the opportunities are.
All right, we had an email question from a listener about ANWR. This person, Cheryl, says, I'm curious about whether the residents of the North Slope borough support opening the 1002 area. What about the borough itself and the tribes in the region?
It's a good question. I think it's important to understand just recent history. And by recent, I want to go back probably about 10 years. If you go back 10 years ago, the state of Alaska was faced with a set of options, and the set of options looked like this. There was little chance, if any, to open up the 1002 to exploration. The wells that were being drilled in the NPRA were coming up empty. In fact, there were lots of wells that had been drilled on an exploration basis, and the results were not that promising. In fact, there was a fairly steady drumbeat between, I want to say, about 2007 or 8, where companies would go out and look. They didn't find what they thought they were going to find, and then they would relinquish leases in the NPRA. And frankly, at that point, we were really kind of looking at what was available onshore in areas owned by the state. At the same time, we were looking at offshore opportunities, which are more distant, further away, and frankly more capital intensive. So now what we see is a different set of opportunities, which are focused on the very good work of Senator Murkowski and the delegation of placing us in a position where there may be leasing available in the 1002. And there's new information from both wells and seismic data that have been generated in the NPRA, which indicates there's a lot more oil there than we thought there was a few years ago. So getting to the question, which is Caribou, we're very cognizant that there's four caribou herds on the North Slope. There's the porcupine, the central Arctic, the Tushpuck, and the western Arctic caribou herds. And we spend a great deal of time understanding those various herds and what I'll call the overall number of caribou that are in those herds. And it's true that those numbers have gone up, they've gone down over time, but we've seen that there has been access to those caribou for subsistence purposes, that in areas where we see development, for instance, in the Colville Delta around the Alpine facility, that there's been pretty steady take. It is true that in some cases certain villages experience shortages, and we watched that very carefully. And on Etuvik Pass a few years ago, there were some very lean years as far as being able to access caribou for subsistence purposes. And so we work very hard to manage those, and we think we've done that very well. And we think that there's a success story there that people have to appreciate, and we certainly do.
How would the drilling season, if this area were open, ANWR, and even other areas of the NPRA, how would the drilling season butt up against calving season for caribou?
Right. That's a very good question. So really, this is oversimplifying things, but what we would expect to see is that there would be three large buckets of activity. The first bucket of activity in an area like the 1002 would be to go out and conduct seismic activity, and that's a wintertime activity. It's done only after the tundra firms up and you've got permission for tundra travel, is what they call it. And that's after freeze up, after snow cover in most cases. And the impacts of seismic on calving are literally zero, in the sense that it all happens in the months of January, February, March, and April. And then your equipment is taken from the tundra and calving occurs after that. I'm not saying there would be, maybe it's a little far to say that it would be zero, but very, very limited. Then you go into the exploration phase, same scenario. You typically build, and the most recent example is Point Thompson, which is only a few miles away from the 1002, where for exploration purposes, you build ice roads, you build an ice airstrip. There's a marine haul, which usually dumps equipment off on the beach in the fall. And then during the winter, you build an ice pad, and from that ice pad, you drill exploration wells. And again, once those ice pads melt, your operation is completely shut down, and that is then when the caribou return to the area or to the areas where they would like to calve. So then you get into the development of production, and that's where you really have to very carefully understand what impacts there are. And we think that both at Point Thompson, which is the most recent example on state land, but also on the western edge of development, which is in the Alpine area with CD5 and now GMT1, the central caribou and the Tushpuck herds our experience there. The community of Nuitsuk in particular is dependent upon those caribou. And I think if you go in and take a good look at the subsistence activities in those areas, industry and the permitters, in some cases it's the state as the lead permit, in other cases it's the BLM as the lead permitter, they've done a very good job of making sure that those caribou coexist with development.
If you're just joining us, this is Talk of Alaska, and today our guest is the Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources, Andy Mack. We're talking about the future of resource development in Alaska. You can join our conversation at 1-800-478-8255. That's the statewide number, 1-800-478-8255. In Anchorage, it's 550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. Commissioner Mack, you said that there is interest in ANWR from companies. Which companies are really kind of bullish about ANWR drilling?
The inquiries that we've had are from incumbents in Alaska, but also from international oil companies. You know, one of the things that's been real interesting in Alaska that's happened over the last 10 or 15 years is that we've experienced a number of companies, foreign national companies, in particular Eni, which is the Italian national company, which is owner-operator of the Nikaichuk project. We recently had Repsol, which is the Spanish national oil company. And then we've had a number of smaller independents. We've had Hillcorp, which has come to the state in a very big way, and the North Slope in a very big way. And then we've got smaller independents than even a Hillcorp that are active on the North Slope, the Armstrongs and the Kalises of the world. And so we're getting interest not only from the incumbent companies, but we're getting interest from people who are looking at a variety of opportunities. And the way this usually happens is they send a team of geologists. We have a wonderful facility here, which is a public facility. I would invite anybody to go to. It is called the Geological Materials Center. It's in the old Sam's Club off Muldoon there.
My neighborhood.
Wonderful neighborhood, and it's got this incredible new state asset. And the Geological Materials Center was created by the legislature and with the support of the governor, of Governor Walker, to be the warehouse for information, both on the mining side and the oil side. And it is a repository for this incredible array of information that companies are looking at to understand what the prospects are going forward. And what's wonderful about it is you can go, it's a one-stop deal where you can go and you can look at stuff that was, you know, for instance, well data from 1975 or 1985, which is now 30 years old. And then you can actually understand what the USGS is actually producing. And you can also look at more current 3D seismic. So what we usually experience is teams of folks from companies that are interested looking at opportunities, what I would call in the east, which is the 1002, and the west, which is the NPRA, and then on state lands, where they're looking at all of these opportunities and trying to make a determination on what they recommend to their companies and their executive teams as they go about investing their money globally.
It makes sense that incumbents on the North Slope would be interested in other areas opening up, potentially opening up. Isn't it at all surprising that other companies, especially given the boom that we've seen in the lower 48, where it's less expensive to develop, there's a road system. And so there's been a big push down south. Is it surprising at all that other companies are interested in still coming to Alaska, especially against the backdrop of the oil prices being what they are?
We don't find it surprising in this sense, is that Alaska has always been a place where the costs were significant. I don't necessarily agree when I hear people say it's a high-cost area because there's lots of infrastructure that's been in place for a long time. It certainly isn't a low-cost area, though. In fact, I think Conoco, I think Mr. Marushak made a recent speech where he talked about the cost of doing business in Alaska, and he says it's not the lowest, it's not the highest, it's somewhere in between. And So I don't think that it's surprising that folks would come up here and look at all. And in fact, with the information that's publicly available now, what we see is more companies looking. You know, historically, if you think about how information and geological information was generated, it was generated by usually a very large company that could afford all the upfront costs. And of course, they went out and hired a seismic company, collected the data, and that would be their data to understand what the opportunities were. Now there's lots of publicly available information. So we're seeing all kinds of folks, you know, looking and interested. And the one thing about Alaska that has always been true, and this is just a kind of a saying, but we have great rocks. And the geology here is tremendously prolific. And if you look at Prudhoe Bay, which is a 13 billion barrels of produced oil field with more of a future ahead of it, those don't happen very often.
Mm-hmm. The state would love to see a new assessment of the refuge's oil potential using updated technology, 3D seismic. What would that accomplish? Why is that needed?
Well, it's really important because as all of these companies and these investors are looking at their options, what they want to know is how quickly they can capitalize on their investment. And the better information you have before you put a bid in the ground, the higher chance you have of actually achieving the objective of producing oil. So most of the companies are wanting to look at the most recent 3D seismic that's available in any particular area. If they can get that and a couple of well results, some well logs, then they're even in a stronger position. Mm-hmm. And
it's all about attracting investors at that point, is
sure,
that correct?
Sure, sure. And you know, and they're looking, you know, most of these companies are, there's so much information available publicly now across the globe that, you know, you can go online right now and you can find out a lot of information about companies in, you know, Asia. You can find a lot of information about companies in the Middle East in some cases. You can find out a lot of information about what's going on in Texas and the Gulf of Mexico. So you kind of can get a sense, if you're an investor, what the opportunity is. And so they want that new 3D seismic, and they want to couple that, if they can, with well results. We don't have well results in the 1002, but at least it'll give them an idea of what the geology looks like and where they can go, and they can start to plan for an exploration program. And so when we heard Secretary Zinke's comments in late May of this year, where he was talking about going out and generating new geological or geophysical information, we were very excited, and we think it will be a huge driver in the interest of investors.
Well, before we move on to other areas of resource development, let's take some calls. Matthew is in Koktovik. Hi, Matthew.
Hello.
Do you have a question?
Yes, yes, I do have a question, and thank you for allowing me to be on your show. And I am in support of what is being discussed here today. And I would have a question for Mr. Mack, and that question is, do residents of the North Slope support development in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge?
Hi, Matthew. Thanks for the question. The residents of the North Slope do support activity in the 1002, and it's my belief, and I will stand corrected if somebody from the North Slope calls me and tells me otherwise, they are in favor of responsible development, in particular with respect to onshore development. It's been my experience, and I have spent some time up in the North Slope, that with respect to onshore development, there's been lots of work done, where the North Slope Borough in particular is a permitting agency there. It's within their borough boundaries. They have the same permitting options that a municipality would expect to have anywhere. And they spend a great deal of time examining the impacts to their residents and their citizens. And, you know, I think what I hear when I talk to folks, including many of the leaders there, many of the folks that work around the borough, is that they're very, very thoughtful and very capable about expressing if they see a concern. And they've historically have done that. If you look at the history of the North Slope Borough, from Evan Hobson to Georgia Mawok to Jessely Kaliak to Edward Itta to Mayor Harry Brower, they've always been more than willing to step into a discussion where they thought there were impacts.
But Matthew, do you have a different perspective? Being in Coktovik, there has historically been some tension between the residents of Coktovik and Utqiagvik leadership, borough leaders in the North Slope Borough. What's your experience being in Coktovik? Are you a resident there?
Yes, I am a lifelong resident of Coktovik, and I am supportive, as well as a lot of the folks here. And just as a new community, there may be folks who may not support that, but from what I've seen, the majority of the folks that I've encountered and speak with, they are supportive of this type of development.
And is it because, I want to follow up with you, Matthew, is because you do live right there, is it because there's less risk onshore in your mind than offshore?
Oh, yes, very much so. When the exploration or development is occurring, that majority of the development would occur during the winter season. And if there were happened to be a spill, it's a lot easier to clean up. And so, yes, we are, that is another reason why we are supportive of how its development occurs in the Arctic.
All right. Well, thanks so much for the call. It's not often that we get a call from Coktovik, so I'm glad that you called and weighed in. Thanks, Matthew. And we're going to stay with the phones for a moment. Matt is in Sitka. Hi, Matt. We went from Matthew
good morning,
to Matt.
And thank you for taking my call. I don't know a lot about the oil industry. I worked on the North Slope back in the 70s, but it's last week the spot market was for a barrel of oil was something like $60 a barrel, with West Texas being a couple of bucks lower, and I suppose Alaska crude would be lower than West Texas, but I'm not sure of that. But $60 a barrel, nonetheless, seems, considering recent history, a pretty good price. Why can't the state, you know, isn't this good news for the state? Isn't that, I mean, how much do we need to get a barrel of oil up to before we're out of the woods? Commissioner, I maybe you could talk about that.
All right. Well, thanks for the question, Matt. And I think the price of Alaska this morning, crude was $61 a barrel. But what does that mean? It's got to be sustained for a certain period of time before it really starts to get reflected in the state's coffers. Is that correct, Commissioner?
You know, Matt, that's an incredibly good question, because we've been grappling with what are two principal questions from the state's perspective. And, you know, broadly speaking, we are running at a $3 billion a year deficit right now as a state. So we have an approximate, you know, a budget of just under $4.5 billion. And the revenue which we have received from both royalty and production tax from oil is right in the neighborhood, in the last year, in this current year, in the neighborhood of $1.2, $1.3 billion a year. So you can understand the delta between what we generate in oil revenue and what we are spending as a state to provide services. And this includes schools, public safety, health.
All kinds of things.
Fish and game management.
Roads. Bridges.
Yeah. And what we did is we have been watching this extremely carefully. And we came up with what is a preliminary a preliminary revenue forecast, which we presented to the legislature as a part of the special session, which is ongoing right now. And the really good news in the revenue forecast was that we were forecasting now that production was going to flatten out. Now, what we've heard for the last 15 years, because it was a true statement, was that production was declining about 5.5% year over year.
Right.
And we were headed into a place where we could expect less than 350,000 barrels of daily production. In a 10-year window, we would be at 330,000 barrels a year. But because of ingenuity, because of new development, because of new discoveries and a lot of focus on maintaining production, we have modified our production forecast. And now we are going to see a modest increase. I would call it flattening of production, so no decline. And then the 5.5% decline, we believe now will be somewhere in the neighborhood of 1 or 2%. And we're putting a lot of information into a model which then kicks out this production forecast. So the important thing about that is not to misconstrue good news with what would be unbelievably good news, and that is that production is going to rise. Production is going to remain flat. And so we're avoiding the pitfalls of having to deal with a state budget which is reliant on less than 350,000 barrels a year. What we're looking at for the next decade is fairly flat production with a modest decline. The other big modifier in the state budget is price. And frankly, we as a state have never been a price maker. We're always a price taker. In other words, we sell our royalty oil. We take our royalty from the money that is, or from the production, which is generated by the producers. And, the world basically sets the price. Mm-hmm. And we've been probably a little bit optimistic in some of our price forecasts. And what we've done is modified those so we think they reflect reality. And we think the price is going to go up. And we think it's going to be stable. But we don't think it's going to hit $70 or $80 a barrel, because I think, and many people think, that if you see $70 or $80 a barrel, it will simply result in lots more production coming online. And so what we have is we do see increased revenues at the state level, but in the hundreds of millions of dollars, in fact, $200 or $300 million in additional revenue. And it gets to the very basic issue of we still have this challenge with the budget where we're $2.5 to $3 billion out of whack, and we are going to make some ground up in bridging that fiscal gap, but not enough.
It's still a fiscal gap.
Significant one.
We are going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll continue our conversation with the Department of Natural Resources Commissioner Andy Mack as we talk about the future of resource development. And I anticipate we'll move on from oil and look at some other aspects of development as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Older Persons Action Group publishes Senior Voice, Alaska's only statewide publication for seniors, and is an excellent source of information for families and caregivers. SeniorVoiceAlaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG.
4 out of 5 Alaskans addicted to heroin started by using prescription opioids. Common opioids include hydrocodone, oxycodone, morphine, fentanyl, and codeine. Safely getting rid of unused opioid medications prevents anyone from taking them without permission, which could endanger them and lead to consequences with law enforcement. Find out more at opioids.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We have DNR Commissioner Andy Mack in the studio today. We're talking about the future of resource development for Alaska. What is it? What should it be? What should it look like? 1-800-478-8255 if you have questions or you have ideas for what the next big resource boom could be for Alaska. 1-800-478-8255. In Anchorage, the number is 550-8422. 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. So before we move on from oil, you were talking about this. It's not an increase as much as it is just kind of a leveling off, staying kind of the status quo flow through the TAPS line. What are the prospects for the line itself in that respect? It's the TAPS line is kind of a geriatric, getting ready for Social Security, been around for a long time. I know that feeling. So what concerns should we have about the sustainability and the viability of the TAPS line going forward? It's the only line that we've got to move this oil. So how sound is it at this age?
I appreciate the analogy. I would say that the team at LES, Admiral Barrett and his team, have done an outstanding job of making sure that that asset, which is a national asset and certainly a state asset, is in great shape and could serve the state of Alaska for many, many generations to come. And, you know, certainly for my generation, for the next generation. What we have been concerned about is that we would see production drop so low that the changes necessary to make that an efficient system would be very expensive, mm-hmm. Would be somewhat technically challenging.
Trying to keep it warm enough.
Right.
We don't have a big candle, 800-mile candle.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't want that.
So that's why this production forecast news is pretty critical to what Alyeska does and how they plan for the future, because we're saying that, you know, 10 years from now, we're at 533,000 barrels a day. Our official forecast says that we will be at 493,000 barrels per day 10 years from now. That's what we're saying this fall, okay? And we think that's a reliable number, and that's extremely good news for TAPS and for the system. And it's a great bit of good news. But the reality is this, is the reason why it's so important to look at the NPRA and the reason why it's so important to look at the 1002 is that we don't have a crystal ball. And these prospects take lots of capital, lots of personal intensity on a whole range of people, both at agencies and in the private sector. And sometimes things work extremely well, and that's what we're shooting for. But they don't always work as well as you want them to. So we need to continue to look at these areas like the 1002 and NPRA to maintain production and increase production.
What about other areas? Have some of these discoveries that we're seeing piqued company interest in less explored areas of the North Slope?
Well, the whole North Slope itself is underexplored, if you really think about it. I mean, if you look at Alaska as a jurisdiction and you look at the North Slope compared to a place like even Wyoming or places like Montana or other states, Utah, New Mexico, which is producing quite a bit of oil these days, we are underexplored, you know, by a significant factor. In fact, the statistic that I hear very frequently is there's been about 500 exploration wells drilled on the North Slope. And in a place like Wyoming, they've had over 15,000 exploration wells drilled for oil. So you can see that this huge difference in the number of wells. So the places where I think folks are going to start to focus are going to be to the west in the NPRA. I think also that in the Beaufort Sea in shallow water, what we see with Liberty is going to be a model for the future, which is a shallow island. It's been done before at North Star, Nikaichuk, and Ugaruk, so this is not the first time. But I think we're going to see more exciting prospects. Hillcorp has really done a tremendous job of pressing the Liberty project forward and working carefully with the community, carefully with the whaling captains in that area, and we would expect to see more of that.
1-800-478-8255 is the number statewide if you'd like to join the conversation about the future of resource development on Talk of Alaska today with Commissioner Andy Mack of the Department of Natural Resources. 1-800-478-8255. In Anchorage, the number is 550-8422. 550-8422. You can email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. Before we go back to the phones, sticking with NPRA for a moment, the Trump administration is currently reviewing the Obama administration's decision to put parts of NPRA off limits to drilling. Environmental groups worry that drilling will be allowed near Teshikpuk Lake. What do you think about that? Do you think Teshikpuk Lake should stay protected off limits, or what do you think should happen?
I do think that Teshikpuk Lake should stay off limits. I think there are some areas where folks on the North Slope, the subsistence community, the biologists that have looked at these areas have indicated that the wildlife is so, or the terrain there is so important to the wildlife, the caribou migration routes around the lake, and there's a lot of waterfowl there.
Yes.
Now, it doesn't mean that we shouldn't go back and relook at old plans. And if you remember, in 2012 and 2013, there was an integrated activity plan for the NPRA, which basically divided the NPRA in half. And half was placed in a no-lease status, and half was placed in a, or remained in a status where leasing was available. You know, we continue to get new information. We continue to get new information, which is important economically and could lead to new discoveries. And the information about the habitat there is critically important as well, and it continues to be updated. And so we think that we should, we were excited to hear that when the secretary was here that he was going to go in and look for you know, generate new geological information. And we think that the NPRA in that particular area can certainly use another assessment as to what should be available for leasing.
All right. Well, let's go back to the phones. Morgan is on the Kuskokwim. Hi, Morgan.
Yeah, Morgan, can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Yeah, this is your discussion, and I got a couple of points to make. For one thing, I among many Alaskans, I kind of discouraged at the way that Talk of Alaska, it seemed like it's no longer turned into a voice where people can voice their concerns. It's turned into a show controlled by someone who's pushing the government's programs, you know, and it's making our expanded discovery sound.
Do you have a question, Morgan?
Yeah, my question is, instead of selling all our natural gas to China, you know, why don't you develop some of it to help our rural economies? Because if you need to provide like a 5,000 gallon tank in each speech home, they could heat their homes, they could wash their, dry their clothes, they could cook, and provide cheap energy for our area. But I'm concerned that people don't like when you're so always taken over by a host who asks a liberal guest question, and they take 20 minutes to answer, and only two or three people get to call in. But seems like it's a way to justify they're having to tax us. And in that North Slope, like in 2 weeks, our permanent hunting made enough to cover that. In North Slope production can make in 2 weeks to cover all the money they're trying to take away in taxes. And it can take away our permanent fund. And doing things like this, using public radio or public media to support their own agenda, it's wrong. People should get an opportunity to speak out and give good ideas. That's only one side.
All right. Well, Morgan, we've heard from your side now. Thank you for weighing in. We're going to move on. Morgan raised the issue of providing for rural Alaska. What are your thoughts about that, Commissioner?
It's very important that whatever we do with respect to gas, that it include the opportunity to provide in-state gas. In fact, Senate Bill 138, which is the controlling legislation for how the state would respond, requires that there be five in-state offtake portals, if you will, where any system that's built has to include 5 offtakes so that people across Alaska can benefit from the development of natural gas or the production of natural gas off the North Slope. And it is something that folks across Alaska are very, very focused on. And, you know, I can assure you, Morgan, that we are in very routine conversation with Representative Foster and Senator Hoffman and Speaker Edgman and other people who are reminding us all the time that this system, if built without the opportunity for Alaskans to enjoy the benefits of low-cost, clean, and reliable energy, not just next to the pipeline, but all across rural Alaska, that is not going to work well. It's got to work for everybody in Alaska. So it's a good question, and we are, believe me, the law requires that we do it, and it is not so much a requirement, but the right thing to do in the case of AKLNG.
And do you think this is a newer mindset for the state's leadership as opposed to when the Trans-Alaska Pipeline was put in and the idea was get this oil to market and help us build the economy through the cash that comes from that? Is this a new way of seeing resource development in Alaska?
Well, you know, TAPS was, you know, predicated on the on ANCSA. And ANCSA was a very complex agreement, which obviously included land, 44 million acres, and just under $1 billion in cash being distributed to Alaska Native corporations. And, you know, so that was the general agreement there. This is a new deal. But we live in an age, and it's something that Morgan didn't answer or ask about specifically, but I think it's very important as we see the impacts of climate around our state. And we believe that LNG is a lower impact, cleaner burning fuel, and if handled right, can really be a benefit across the state. And you know, for the state in general and the Treasury, but also for communities.
All right, let's go back to the phones for a moment. John is in Juneau. Hi, John.
Hi, it's real interesting. My comment kind of ties into the last ones. We're talking primarily about oil development. And really, what we've got to look at is the other resources in Alaska, that great untapped west. I personally think that it's foolish to continue on the path of hydrocarbons when we have everything from rare earth elements to dozens of other minerals available, and the main thing we need is infrastructure. If we were to tap into our monies, it should be going for something like a railroad extension from Fairbanks to Nome to open up the resources that can actually fuel us into the 21st century rather than staying with hydrocarbons.
Well, John, I'm really glad that you brought that up because that is absolutely an area that we wanted to move into. So, yeah, let's move from oil and talk about the prospects for other resource development, such as John mentioned, rare earth minerals. There's a big push for electric cars across not only the nation but in the world. And there's a need for nickel for the storage batteries for those cars. What are the prospects for other types of mining here? We've got some long-standing mines, Red Dog with zinc and other mines. What's the future look like, Commissioner?
The future for mines in Alaska is generally bright. And what we have in Alaska is 6 large operating mines. We've got Red Dog, Fort Knox, Yosemite, Pogo, Kensington, and Greens Creek. And, you know, what's interesting about all these mines is that when I was growing up here in Alaska, Yosemite was the only mine. It was around before I was born. But each of those mines has been developed, in the 80s and 90s and in the last 10 or 15 years. So they're of recent vintage. In Alaska, you know, the governor says this all the time, and it's a fact, that as a state, if we were a country, we would be ranked 8th in mineral wealth. And there are lots of places where we are excited about and really focused on, you know, a whole variety of minerals, including gold and copper and lots of other mineral opportunities. We also have lots of rare earth minerals too, which has been an issue that.
And please, for people that aren't familiar with that term, what are we talking about there when we say rare earth?
Yeah, those are the more hard to come by, not as common minerals. You know, gold and ore and silver and those types of minerals are not rare earth minerals. They're mined in large quantities and large facilities, and rare earth is something that is used more on a lower scale. But there's a couple of things that that John, you mentioned that are important. First, we are working hard to bring infrastructure to areas where we think there should be mineral activity. One of the places that has been discussed is the Ambler Mining District. Now, there are people in that area that are concerned about the impacts of bringing a road and infrastructure into that region. And so we're working very hard to understand what those concerns are, but we are talking about how we can get to that resource, which is currently in an area where it would be very difficult to develop and produce. You know, there's other pieces of infrastructure we'd like to do on the North Slope. There's lots of work around. I'll give you an example of another piece of infrastructure that we are focused on that is related to a mine, and that is the development of the Port Clarence area. Bering Strait Native Corporation was worked very hard to get the Congress to pass legislation where the federal government basically engaged in an agreement where they took ownership of large parts of the former Loran site there.
Right.
And just inland of that, there's a beautiful graphite deposit, it's really a tremendous opportunity where you've got infrastructure, and if you can develop that infrastructure, then you probably have a better chance of developing that graphite mine. And graphite is something that companies like Tesla are very, very interested in.
Let's go back to the phones for a moment. John is in Sitka. Hi, John.
Hi.
Do you have a question?
Yes, a question and first a statement. I was wondering if he has any idea when they go down that far for the oil, when they plug it up, are they making a thermometer from the center of the earth up to us? Is the reason why everything's getting warm? And the thousands and thousands and millions of them all over the world are being plugged and making thermometers everywhere? And one of the statements or one of the questions I'd like to ask is if we do the human resource and start looking at what businesses are out here and start looking at who owns them and how to try to get more people involved in working in Alaska, because I've been in construction all my life. I'm 61 years old. And I couldn't even get a job here in construction in Sitka. I got $20,000 in brand new tools in my garage, and I'm a construction worker, and I don't see a way in. So I think we should ask, this is the question, is if we put a bigger bite in discrimination, do you think it would help us develop more people working and helping Alaska rather than, I hate to say it, but all the businesses that are around, most of them are owned by a dominant society, not a variety of ownerships all over.
Okay.
If I seen a way in to get into construction, I'm a native Alaskan. I have $20,000 of brand new tools. I've been there for a couple of years because I don't see a way into the field with discrimination the way it is.
Well, let's give the commissioner a chance to respond, John. You know, we do need to take a quick break, so let's do that first so that when we come back, we can talk uninterrupted in the last 10 minutes as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by
BP. BP believes that Alaskans know their state best and invests in recruiting and hiring from their own backyard. 78% of the BP employees who work here live in Alaska. BP.com/Alaska. Do you need health insurance for next year? Did you know Alaska's individual market health insurance rates have dropped by more than 20% for 2018? More than 90% of Alaskans who sign up at healthcare.gov are eligible for tax credits to help pay the costs. Open enrollment is November 1st through December 15th of this year. Check out healthcare.gov to find out what your insurance options are for 2018. This message sponsored by the Alaska Division of Insurance.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. Commissioner Andy Mack of the Department of Natural Resources is with us today. And Commissioner Mack, we just had a couple of questions from John in Sitka, one about the depths of the wells and if that might be contributing to climate change, and also discrimination in the workforce.
The answer to the first question is the wells are typically between 5 and 10,000 feet, and AOGCC does a great job of making sure those wells are contained and capped where appropriate. And so, no, it's not an issue, and they're fairly shallow compared to the surface of the earth. As far as human resources is concerned, the governor's very concerned about Alaskan hire and understands that it's a real challenge across the state. And we work very hard as an administration to make sure that we are doing everything we can to hire Alaskans, and we'll continue to do that.
All right. Let's stay with the phones for a moment. Nick is in Palmer. Hi, Nick.
Hello. I just turned my radio off. Hello?
Yes. Do you have a question?
I kind of a comment for the DNR head. I think his job is the most important job in the state of Alaska. I mean, I equate him with like the governor and as far as importance goes, because the natural resources are the only way we're going to get this economy off the ground. I got a couple ideas for the different resources that we really should be developing on really hard, and a couple of them were touched on. But our three major resources that we should work on, the minerals, the oil, the gas, and the mining, that's already here. We just need the people for it. The next one, the timber, which is completely shut up. And if we start clear cutting, we could boost our wildlife industry. We could do so much more for the old growth forest by cleaning them out and using that resource before they all burn. And the fishing industry, which we're doing a pretty dang good job of regulating that. If we can keep the international fishers and poachers and the northern Asians out of our fishing waters, which I really think we ought to make a key one concern, because they're decimating our fisheries further out and on the edges of our fisheries. As far as the oil and gas goes, we need refineries in Alaska right now. I mean, it's ridiculous that we have to buy gasoline from Texas or California or wherever it's coming from. We can refine it right here for so much cheaper, and the resources the Alaska Constitution says has to be developed for the people of the state. So if we could have refineries out there near the villages, a refinery in Nome would be awesome. If we had more exploration near the villages where they could sell directly to the Alaskans, they didn't have to pipe it anywhere except for on small local pipe scale systems, that'd be great. Let's open up exploration around these villages and say, hey, if you find the gas there, we'll buy it at this price for this amount of time. Secondly, the only thing that is keeping... Not secondly, the only thing that's keeping all our oil and gas taking off in Alaska is the government. The government's getting in the way. That's what Trump is about, is cutting regulation and open up jobs. And any time we say we can't get the oil out of the gas, can't get the oil out of the ground, it's government regulation.
Okay,
we
so
need to make
Nick,
looking
you've
for it almost free.
You've
we
raised
need to let
a
them
lot
get in there
of questions.
Give them long-term leases.
Thank you. You've raised a lot of issues here. We only have a few minutes left. I'd like to give the commissioner a chance to respond. First, this issue of refineries. Commissioner, it's a numbers game, right? I mean, it just doesn't pencil out.
You know, we've got two in-state refiners now, PetroStar and Endeavor, which is formerly known as Tesoro, and they do a very good job. They buy most of the royalty oil from the state on contract, and they process the oil. It is a market-driven system, though, and the you know, it's a frustration for Alaskans. I understand it. I've lived here my entire life, is that you go down to someplace else in the lower 48 and
gasoline
is cheaper than,
right,
than at your local station
sense.
Here.
It doesn't on its surface make sense to people.
Yeah. But you know, we have actually one of the things that happened in the last session is when there were tax credits available for oil companies, there was also tax credits available for refiners, and we made sure that those were maintained so that the companies that were here and wanted to expand could rely on those tax credits and take advantage of those programs, and those programs are still in state. You know, I did want to touch on something that Nick mentioned, which we haven't talked about today, which is timber.
Mm-hmm.
And timber is, you know, an part of our economy, and it hasn't gone well recently in Southeast Alaska. And, you know, our efforts through Governor Walker and Lieutenant Governor Malott, Lieutenant Governor Malott has really taken a leading role in trying to understand what the possibilities are, particularly in Southeast Alaska, particularly with the Tongass. And we have, you know, we have a timber plan, which is to work to make sure that there's enough resources to do the processing to get timber sales into the public domain so that people can bid on timber tracts. And so it's something that we think won't be a huge part of the economic puzzle, but it will be an important part going forward.
All right, let's get one more call in our final couple of minutes here. We have not talked about natural gas. The governor is in China right now, and Nathan is on the line from Prudhoe Bay with a natural gas question. Hi, Nathan.
Hello, how are you?
Good. Do you have a quick question for the commissioner?
I do have a quick question. I would really like to know why we haven't at least run a gas line down to Fairbanks, because those people pay sometimes more in heating oil than they do in their rent or their mortgage. I want to know why we don't run a gas line at least that far and then let everybody else go from there.
All right. Well, thanks for a succinct question, Commissioner Mack.
So a handful of years ago, the legislature realized that the home heating fuel costs in Fairbanks were so far out of whack with folks' ability to actually heat their homes, and that the air quality there was so bad that they had to do something. And they passed legislation which resulted in the Interior Energy Project being created. And one of the things that they actually examined at the early stages was whether they could truck LNG down the Dalton Highway from the North Slope to right. Fairbanks. And as it turns out, what the experts who looked at that and the people who modeled that said it's cheaper to actually bring gas from Cook Inlet into Fairbanks. And so, you know, there's been some recent news where FNG and IGU, which are the two utilities in the Fairbanks region, have worked to bring natural gas from the Cook Inlet to the Fairbanks region because it's not as critical today as it might have been 3 or 4 years ago because the cost of home heating fuel is lower. But it still remains a challenge. I mean, it's a challenge in Fairbanks. And as our friend in Morgan said, and some of the people out west, it's very challenging in rural Alaska.
We got to go. That's it for today. Thanks to Commissioner Andy Mack.
This is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Wells Fargo, with over 13,000 ATMs and more than 6,000 branches coast to coast. For a branch location near you, visit wellsfargo.com.
One of the greatest honors for a public media station is delivering on its promise to provide quality programming and news you can trust to the communities it serves. What you hear on air is the result of a dedicated team working together to bring you the best. It's a privilege to be a part of your day. Thank you for listening, for your feedback, and for your support.
Thinking about completing your college degree? Good news, you can finish it right here at the University of Alaska. Go after your dream by earning a bachelor's, master's, a certificate, or an associate degree at the University of Alaska. Flexible classes, convenient schedules, affordable choices, and outstanding faculty, the university has it all. It's your choice, your dream. See how the University of Alaska can help you achieve it at alaska.edu/start here. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska.
This program is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400. This is Alaska Public Media.